Okay, good morning, everyone. Let's begin. First of all, we dedicate our learning this morning in the Zuchus of Refuah Shalema for Chaya Esther Bas Vega Yenta and the hope in the merit of our communal Talmud Torah, she should experience a full Refuah Shalema. So welcome back to everyone after the, I'm sure you all had a wonderful and relaxing winter break. So we're continuing, Emir Tzashem, with our study of Tehillim. But what I'd like to do, as we've done each time we resume a new semester, is instead of beginning with a particular kapitel, to do a little bit of an introduction. And again, the amazing part is you could do multiple introductions to Sefer Tehillim, because there are so many different and dynamic aspects and facets of it. So I'd like to focus on one interesting idea that's a global idea of Tehillim that I think will help to set the table for our conversations for the rest of the semester. So if you take a look on your sheet, everyone has a sheet? Okay, if you take a look at sources 1 through 3 on your sheet, you'll find something interesting. In our study of Tehillim, we're actually up to Kapitel Yudalit. As you can see, we're certainly not in a rush. After about, I think now, a year and a half of learning Tehillim, we've gotten through 14 Kapitlach, but okay. So the last Kapitel we left off with was Kapitel Yud Gimel, chapter 13. So take a look at number 1. David HaMelech says, V'ani b'chastecha batachti, yageli bi b'shuasecha, ashira l'Hashem ki gamal alai. God, I've trusted in your loving kindness, my heart will rejoice in your salvation, I will sing to the Lord, ashira l'Hashem ki gamal alai, because He has bestowed it upon me. That's from chapter 13. Number 2, is Kapitel Kuf Aleph, chapter 101, L'David Mizmor, for David a song, Chesed u'mishpat ashira lecha Hashem azameira. I shall sing of kindness and judgment to you, O Lord, I shall sing. Good. Number 3, Kapitel 104, Kuf Dalet, ashira lehashem bechayai, azamra lelokai ba'odi. I shall sing to the Lord while I am alive. I shall sing praises to my God as long as I exist. What's the common denominator between these three psukim that I quoted to you?
Singing.
Right? That if you look at Tehillim is all about song. It's all about Shira. We've mentioned a number of different times that, right, the Kapitlach speak about Lamnatseach or Mizmor, that David HaMelech didn't just compose songs, but he even composed the musical compositions for the songs. Now, if we look at the fact that Tehillim is one big song, what's the fundamental problem we have? Based on everything we've learned in Tehillim until now.
It's hard to sing about terrible things.
Well said. Meaning that at the end of the day, when we look at Tehillim, certainly the first 13 chapters that we have studied, the truth is the theme has really been one of turbulence, of difficulty, of tragedy, of suffering. Yes, all laced with an incredible and almost Herculean dose of optimism. But so far, the first 13 kapitlach, and I'll tell you, the truth is, that's pretty much the same theme for the rest of it, is David HaMelech speaking about his life difficulties. And so it's strange, because when we think about Shira, if we do word association, so I say Shira, and you say?
Happiness.
The Pashtos, that's what we assume Shira is all about. And yet here, David HaMelech, and I just want to point out to you, I only quoted to you 3 examples of this. We could bring another 33 examples of this, of David HaMelech using the word Shira. And also I'll tell you something interesting, that in each one of these kapitlach where David HaMelech speaks about Shira, he's also speaking about difficulty. He's also speaking about tragedy. He's also speaking about failures. So how are we to understand this Davidic dynamic of Shira? Because it's not colloquial Shira. It's not the way we normally think about Shira. How are we to understand? Yes. Right. I wasn't expecting that one. Okay, good. No, Enachinami. It's true. And the truth is, it's an interesting din. You know, there was a very famous non-Jewish English preacher by the name of Henry Giles. And he said that a song is worth 1,000 sermons. A song is worth 1,000 sermons. This idea, they say, although I don't know if I heard the name of the Chassam Sofer, but I'm not sure if it's actually, I heard it kind of third party. Well, obviously third party, not from the Chassam Sofer. But I'm not sure if it's about the Chassam Sofer. But anyway, the idea is quite powerful, that the Chassam Sofer said that he would have given away half of his Torah knowledge for the ability to compose music. Why? Because music is exceptionally powerful. The power of music is, a word is a word. And even if a word has multiple definitions, a word is limited. Music, on the other hand, could mean so many different things to so many different people. And the same music speaks to you one way in a particular situation of life. And so, the example of the blues is a very good one, that clearly people felt that there was a way to... Now, remember, just to use the blues for just a moment, right? So the blues has its... Not that I'm a bucky in the blues, but the blues has its origins where? Right, in the South. The truth is, originally, song was the way that the black slaves spoke about the difficulties of their servitude. So why didn't they just give a drasha? Right? Why didn't they just say it? Or why didn't they just tell a story? Because there is something. So it's an excellent point. So you want to suggest that Shira is not contradictory to those feelings of difficulty. True. But nevertheless, it did come out that when we speak about Shira, people often associate it with happiness. Now, by the way, why is that? Why is it that if we do the word association, that when I say Shira, you say happiness? Where do we get that association from?
Weddings,
bar mitzvahs, parties. Az Yashir. Because the truth is, this week's parsha, the first time we ever see Shira in the Torah, it's triumphant Shira. It's not suffering Shira. It's not difficult Shira. It's not the blues. Right? But rather, what is it? It's triumph. It's right. Az Yashir Moshe Ben Yisrael, Ashira LaHashem Ki Go'og. We've just been so triumphant. We've just been so successful. So when we think about paradigmatic Shira, Shira is associated with life success. And although, yes, we have other Shira, and by the way, I'll take it a step further. Interestingly enough, the next time we have Shira in the Torah is when? After Az Yashir? Ha'azinu. Very good. Right? Ha'azinu. Now, even though Ha'azinu discusses certain things that people have to be wary of as well, meaning certain ways you have to behave. But Hazinu is also a Shira of triumph. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu was telling it to us when? Right before he's about to die, but more importantly for us, right before we're about to go into Eretz Yisrael. He's preparing us for exceptional accomplishment. So I'd like to try to explore today a little bit, is if our paradigmatic Shira is that Shira represents triumph, that Shira represents happiness, that Shira represents success, then why does David HaMelech, when he speaks about his difficulties, trials, and travails, arrange them as Shiros? Why does he arrange them as songs? And perhaps the more global question we have to try to address is, what is the true essence of Shira? Now, this is very important for us, because once we have a working definition of Shira, this will prepare us for the rest of our learning, for the rest of our kapitlach as we go forward. Yes?
Oh.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Good. Good. We're going to see something very similar to that. We're going to see something. So you say Shira captures that essence of Emunah. Beautiful. So let's. What I'd like to try to do is actually, yes, please. So the truth is, I'll answer that quickly now, and then I think at the end of the shir will be even a better answer, but, or just as an aside, I think Avelos, specifically the morning practices for the Yud Beis Chodesh for the 12 months that one is in Avelos for a parent, are some of the most misunderstood halachos, that people often feel them almost to a certain degree as punitive. And that's why I often find it sad when people look for ways to circumvent it, right? I want to go to my friend's wedding, so suddenly now I'm the photographer, right? I'm walking around with a $2.50 disposable camera. They're paying $5,000 to a photographer, but I'm the photographer. The whole point of the Nihugi Avelos is we often assume that when a person dies, the neshama immediately ascends to Shamayim. So the truth is, the Sfarim HaKadoshim bring down that that's not the case. The neshama goes through a journey. So just very quickly, so the Zohar writes that after a person dies, the neshama remains with the body until kvura. After burial, During Shiva, Neshama shuttles back and forth between the cemetery and the house of mourning. When Shiva is over, the Neshama goes back to the cemetery and remains with the body until after Shloshim. Now, what's going on over here? What the Zohar is saying is, the Neshama, the same way that when a person loses a loved one, they experience a degree of disorientation. They don't know what their world is. So ultimately, the Neshama goes through that same process as well. Not with pain, but the Neshama lived its life in a human body, needs to figure out now what's going on. And then after Shloshim, the Neshama realizes it's not coming back into the body, begins its ascent to Shamayim. That journey takes a year, the Zohar writes. Takes a year. The whole purpose of the Nehugi Avelos, the whole purpose of mourning practices during that year, is to understand that a person, a loved one, the living loved one, has to aid the neshama of their deceased loved one in that journey. How do we do that? Through our mitzvos, through our Torah, through our chesed. So all of the restrictions of the 11 months are to make sure that a person is singularly focused with aiding the neshama of their loved one to go ahead and make that journey. So all the prohibitions focus on things that normally cause a person to forget about life and just enjoy the moment. See, you can't attend a simcha. Why? Because when you go to a simcha, the beautiful part about a simcha is, it's a simcha. You really feel like you could leave all of your difficulties behind, and you could just go to... Well, during that year, you're not supposed to leave your difficulties behind. They're supposed to come with you. Music is the same idea. The beauty of music is it could be a cathartic experience. When you are absorbed by a nigun, when you're absorbed by music, you forget everything. And you become one with that music. That's fine for the rest of your life. But it's not good when you have to be singularly focused on the neshama.
A 100%.
No question.
You're talking about a more serious music. At least the Torah doesn't.
Right. You know? Correct. There's also a fine line. A person can't totally recede from life. They still have to be somewhat. Okay. So that's what I'd like to try to explore today a little bit. Is this Nate? Yes.
I'm so sorry.
No, go ahead. No, Kina actually is a wail. Kina is a cry. I mean, you call it a dirge, but the truth is it's not totally good because a dirge often has music associated with it as well. But the Kina is dafka, the antithesis of music. A Kina is a cry. No rhythm, no tune, it's just whatever comes out. Whatever comes out. Right. It's true. Well, I mean, emotions are a continuum. I think we spoke about it. Did I mention there's a beautiful idea of Schwab? Zecher Tzadik Livracha brings it down as to, he quotes the Arizal, as to why it is that people cry by a simcha. Did we speak about that? There's a beautiful, I did? I see that we have machlokes. Right. So I'll say it quickly. So the Rishwab brings down, he says, he notes that it's so ironic that we cry by a simcha. He says, what's the pshat? He said, crying is associated with mourning. It doesn't, sort of Rishwab says that, oh, we did. I spoke about this by one of the kapitlach last semester. So Rishwab says that, you know, when a person is besimcha, there is a certain fundamental awareness that the simcha is not going to last. That for every moment of simcha that we have, we know that there are other more difficult life experiences waiting in the balance for us. So we might not be consciously aware of it. The neshama is aware of it. That's why the reaction to intense simcha is crying, because the more intense the simcha, the more the neshama really knows that it's not going to last. that this experience, as wonderful as it is, will come to an end, and most probably there'll be other difficult experiences to follow. So if there is a continuum, and the continuum begins, you know, with joyous laughter and goes to tears for intense simcha, and then goes to the same tears ultimately for incredible tsar, and goes to song and goes to kina, 100%. It's all the same exact continuum. And the truth is, I think one of the amazing parts that we'll see, that I think we've already developed in Tehillim, that will further come out in Tehillim, is David HaMelech says none of these are contradictory emotions. That the same emotional energy that goes into intense simcha is the same emotional energy that goes into intense tsar. They really are two sides of the same coin, which we'll explore. Yes?
Even in a song that has words, not just the meaning, there's, when it's sung, there's so many other levels that it goes to that are deeper, inchoate.
Right. It's very true. It's very true. I mean, they say that the Rishner, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was at the Shabbos table, only sang Nigunim, didn't sing Zemiros. So they asked the Rishner, they said, why not? He said, because the beauty of a Nigun is a Nigun could be anything you want it to be. He says, you know, a Zemer has words, so you know, you're not going to start substituting words. The words are the words. But a Nigun Mamish could capture the entirety of whatever it is that you're feeling, the Nigun could speak to that. Okay. Anyway. Or maybe we should stop here. This is all right. Baruch Hashem. This is all right. So, let's explore this aspect of the Shira a little bit. But specifically, I'd like to do it through the lens of Az Yoshe. Meaning, David HaMelech is not the first person to compose Shira. The first Shira we have, as we just said before, the truth is, probably, if you want to be more specific, could be that the first Shira is not Oz Yashir. It could be that the first Shira is what? Chana's later. Good. Chana is Chana's later. The first Shira. Oh, Adam Arishon. Good. Very good. The first text. Let me say the first textual Shira could very well be Leah Imenu. That when Leah has Yehuda and she says Hapam Oda Es Hashem, that Hoda'ah. Maybe we should have started with that. All right, but I didn't prepare that, so we'll go with this. Could be actually classified as the first year. Maybe we'll come back to that a different year. So let's take a look at number four. So the Torah says the following: As Yashir Moshe and Yisrael Hashira Hazos LaHashem. So then Moshe Rabbeinu and the Jewish people said this Shira to Hashem. Vayomru Leimor Ashira LaHashem Ki Ga'o Ga'o Sus V'Rachbo Rama Bayom. I will sing to the Lord, for very exalted is He. A horse and its rider He cast into the sea. So I'd like to bring your attention to a very fundamental question, which is, why do they sing Shira now? If anything, when should they have begun to sing Shira? The Makos, maybe I said, they were still in Egypt. They were still in Egypt. When really should Shira have occurred? But Pashas, when they left. Right? But say Shomim Mitzrayim. Right? Maybe when they left, when they actually left real geographic Egypt, why wasn't Shira sung then? Why does Shira only occur after the closing of the Yamsuf, after the closing of the waters over the Egyptians? So the truth is, if you take a look at number five, there's a very simple answer. The Kliyoker says, "Oz Yoshir Moshe Bnei Yisrael Sashir Azos LaHashem, Mashalo Shar Takeith Betzisam Mitzrayim." Why didn't they sing when they immediately left Egypt? Lefi Sheyada Moshe Shadayin Bnei Yisrael Mefakfikin BeEmuna Ad Sheraa Al Hayam SheEminu BaHashem UveMoshe Avdo Oz Yoshir. So the Kliyoker gives an amazing answer. You see, the Kliyoker understands, as is quite evident in the pasuk, that who began Shira? Who began the Shira on the Yamsuf? Moshe Rabbeinu. Oz Yashir Moshe Uvnei Yisrael. Moshe begins the Shira. So says the Kli Yoker, Moshe Rabbeinu was ready to begin Shira when they left Egypt. But Moshe Rabbeinu also knew his constituents. And he knew that their emunah, their belief in God, was not yet solidified. And so to sing Shira without complete, bona fide, and solidified emunah is an exercise in futility. And therefore, it's only by the Yamsuf. Remember, what's the pasuk before the Shira? Vayaaminu b'Hashem Uvemoshe, Abdo Oz Yashir Moshe. So it says the Kli Yakar, only once Moshe Rabbeinu was convinced of their emuna, their true emuna in God, which by the way, their true emuna in God, did they say Shira? I just want to point out to you something very interesting. We see from this, by the way, that there's an amazing thing. When we think about true emuna in God, the one thing the Torah is telling us is true emuna in God does not necessarily require consistency. What do I mean by that? The difficult part that we have in emuna is the sustainability of emuna. Right? We have moments of emuna. We have certain durations of emuna. But I don't know if I can keep it up week to week, month to month, year to year. And we see from this, by the way, that that's okay. That's part of the nature of the human condition. They believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, but by the way, what's the next episode after this? Right, after everybody puts away their symbols and their instruments, what's Mara? Mara. And what happened at Mara? What happened at Mara? They begin to complain to Moshe about the waters. Now, by the way, it's very important. Complaining to Moshe is code. Code for what? Lack of emunah. When they complain against Moshe, it's only because they're too scared to lash out at God. But it really is lashing out at Moshe, is really lashing out at God. It's just an interesting, it's not, this is just a side point, but it's just an important yisod in emunah that doubt and difficulty and lapsing and all of these things, whatever the opposite of continuity is, the opposite of continuity, these are part of the human condition. And so for again, true emunah doesn't mean that I necessarily have that each and every day. It's understandable if a person has a little bit of a back and forth, sometimes stronger, sometimes weaker. Yes? I'm sorry. Mefakfikin means wavering. Wavering. Right, so Moshe, so getting back to this, so the Kli Yakar says they didn't go ahead and say Shira when they left Egypt because Moshe Rabbeinu understood they were mefakfikin. They weren't resolute in their emunah, and therefore it wasn't appropriate to say Shira. It's only once they come to Yamsuf and Moshe Rabbeinu senses that they truly believe Az Yashir Moshe. Now, if you take a look at number 6, I think in order to answer this question as to why they didn't sing Shira by the sea, we have to ask another fundamental question, which is a more grammatic question. So what's the fundamental issue that we have with the phrase Az Yashir Moshe Uvnei Yisrael? It's future. How should it have been written? Az Shar Moshe Uvnei Yisrael Es Hashira Hazos. Then Moshe and the Jewish people sang. Why future tense? So Rashi HaKadosh number 6 gives an interesting interpretation. He says, Az Yashir Az kishera hanes Allah belibo sheyashir shira. So according to Rashi, literally translated, when Moshe saw the nes, when he saw the miracle of the Yam Suf, it dawned on him, Allah belibo, it came into his mind, into his heart, that he should sing a song. So according to Rashi, Yashir actually is almost like a real-time portrayal of events. That as Moshe Rabbeinu sees that all of this is unfolding, Yashir, it occurs to him that it is the right thing to do to what? To what? To sing Shira to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, it's an interesting interpretation, but still doesn't really tell us why the Torah doesn't phrase it in present tense. If you take a look at number 7, the Gemara gives an amazing idea. Gemara Masechet Sanhedrin says the following. Tanya, Om Rabbi Meir, Minayin L'tchias HaNesem Min HaTorah. Where do we know the concept of the resurrection of the dead from the Torah? You know, you have to understand, one of the great anomalies of Judaism is that one of our pillars of faith, two of our major pillars of faith, is number one, the belief in an afterlife, right? Where we go when we die. And number two, the belief in messianic redemption and the different world that will exist when the Melech HaMashiach arrives. What's the fundamental problem we have with those two beliefs? Not fundamental problem, fundamental challenge? The Torah doesn't speak about it explicitly. Which is strange, because everything else that's important to us in Judaism, if not the Torah Shebichsav, the Torah Shebaal Peh, goes into great detail. If the written tradition doesn't do it, the oral tradition does it. But yet, when it comes to the afterlife, Olam Haba, when it comes to what we call the Messianic era, Yemos HaMashiach, if you want to find out about it, interestingly enough, the Rambam writes about it. The Rambam writes about it actually at the end of Hilchos Tshuva, and the Rambam says, you know what he says at the end? He says, his conclusion is, no one really knows what Yemos HaMashiach is going to be, but when it happens, we'll know it. Kind of the same thing with Mashiach, right? How do we know who's really going to be Mashiach? We just believe that when he shows up, we're all going to know. What's Olam Haba? What happens after we die? Ayin lo ra'asa, no one's ever seen it, so no one ever knows. All the thing we know is that it's spectacular. It's spectacular. So says the Gemara, where is a remez? From where do we have at least a scriptural allusion to the concept of resurrection of the dead? We believe that one of the major things that's going to happen when the Malach HaMashiach Raisim here Rabbi Ameinu is Tchias HaNesim. The dead will resurrect. The dead will come back. Now what that means, who's going to come back? Does everybody come back? What age do you come back at? Do you die again after the resurrection or not? These are all major philosophical discussions, not for our topic this morning. But the Gemara is asking, where at least do we see what they call a remez? Where do we see a scriptural allusion to the concept of Tchias HaMeisim? So the Gemara says, Shene'emar, Oz Yashir, Moshe uvenei Yisras Hashir Azos LaHashem. Then Moshe and the Jewish people, future tense, will sing. Sharlo ne'emar, the Gemara doesn't say they sung, rather, Ela Yashir, they will sing. Mikan l'Tchias HaMeisim minat Torah. Says the Gemara, the fact that it's phrased future tense, there will be a day when Moshe and the Jewish people will sing. When is that future day? That refers to the resurrection of the dead. In that future day, there will be ultimate shira when the dead come back to life. What's the problem with the Gemara? Right. It looks easy. Where, Rabbi Meir, did you pull that one out of? Right? Where do you see any level of connection? We understand we have a problem. We have a syntax problem as to why it's phrased in the future. But where do you draw a connection between the future Shira of Moshe and resurrection of the dead? So take a look at number 8. This is quite interesting. The Toldos Yitzchak, and I included a couple of biographies over here so you could see who we're referring to. The Toldos Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak Karo, was the uncle of Rav Yosef Karo, the Mechaber of the Shulchan Aruch. Actually, if you read the biography, amazingly enough, Rav Yosef Karo was orphaned at a young age. The Mechaber of the Shulchan Aruch was orphaned at a young age, raised by his uncle. Okay, so in Toldos Yitzchak, number 8 says the following. V'yesh lahakshos, he says, I'm in 8 Aleph. Lama kol misha medaber be'ikari hadas, mone besof ha'ikarm tchias ha'meisim, So essentially, he asks, where do you get this from? How do you know that Az Yashir Moshe is a scriptural allusion to the concept of Tchias HaMeisim? Now, I have to prepare you for something right now. If you don't want your conceptions about Kriyas Yamsuf to change, you should leave. You should leave. Because I'm telling you right now that this Toldos Yitzchak will forever alter how you understand the miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf. Thing. Okay, so look at this. 8 Aleph. He says, Hatshuva. Lefi she'ra'a Moshe ha'golios v'hashmados v'ra'a she'harbe mi'Yisrael nitva'im bayam. Says the Toldos Yitzchak, many Jews drowned in the Yamsuf. Many Jews drowned in the Yamsuf. Right? See, here's what's amazing. We see a continuing theme. That geula is a very selective process. Just like the Torah says, v'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Yisrael. So the word chamushim, Rashi HaKadosh has two interpretations. Either it means armed, they went with weapons, or chamushim means only one-fifth left Egypt. Only one-fifth left Egypt. Four-fifths died during Choshech. Apparently, says the Toldos Yitzchak, not everybody came out of the Yam Suf either. Not everybody. I'm sorry. Oh, so one second. So not everybody came out. So what does Moshe Rabbeinu see? So Moshe Rabbeinu, when he's standing, Moshe Rabbeinu has crossed through. He's standing at the banks of the Yam Suf. And what does he see? He sees, number one, Hagolios Vashmados. Bless you. Hagolios Vashmados. What does he see? Moshe Rabbeinu knows that as much as they cross the Yam Suf and they're out of Egypt, they're not out of the darkness yet. Moshe Rabbeinu sees all of the difficulties that's still waiting in the future for the Jewish people. He sees the Jews that did not make it out of Yam Suf. Lazeh Omar, listen to this. Vayar Yisrael es Mitzrayim meis al sfas hayom. So what does it mean? The Torah says that they saw the Egyptians whose bodies had washed up on the shore. Elu Mitzrayim hanitvoim bayam lo yisku l'tchiyah. The Egyptians who washed up on the shore, they will not be resurrected in the future. Aval Yisrael hanitvoim yichyu. But the Jews who drowned in the Yam Suf, one day they will come back to life. Oz Yashir. Kilomar Az Bizman Hagiula Yashir Moshe Uvnei Yisrael V'yichyu. So listen to how profound this is. Todos Yitzchak gives us a totally different understanding of the Shira. So Moshe Rabbeinu is standing by the banks of the Shira, by the banks of Yam Suf, excuse me, and what does he see? He sees two things. He sees certain things with his eyes, and he sees certain things with his heart. With his eyes, he sees that only a very small segment of our people were able to come out of Egypt. Only a very small segment were salvageable. And there are Jews who didn't make it out of the Yam Suf. That's what he sees with his eyes. He also sees ahead of him that there are incredible difficulties and very dark chapters of Jewish existence ahead. So when they sing a shir, they have to thank God for everything that happened now. But is the shira complete? Is the shira complete? No. The shira is not complete. How could it be complete? Right? There are people that didn't make it out. There are people that didn't make it out of Egypt. There are people that didn't make it out of Yam Suf. How could it be complete when we know that we're not out of danger yet? Look at all the difficulties that still are ahead of us. So they sing a shira, but they sing a future shira. Oz Yashir Moshe. The day will come, Moshe Rabbeinu says, when we can really sing a full, heartfelt shira to Hashem. When is that day? Is it today? Is it today? No. It's not now. Why is it not now? Because the Jewish bodies are washing up on the shore of the Yam Suf as well. It's not now because we're not out of the woods yet by any stretch of the imagination. We have to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the salvation that He has given us now, but we also have to show that the salvation that we have now is not the complete salvation. Oz Yashir Moshe. So the day will come when we will sing a full song. When is that day? In the Messianic era. So Todos Yitzchak explains, that's the Gemara saying. So when the Gemara says, Minayin L'tchias HaMesa Min HaTorah, what's the relationship between Yam Suf and resurrection of the dead? Because the Jews are standing there by the banks, and they see the bodies of their loved ones washing up also. So where's the salvation? Where's the hope? Where's the optimism in that? You know what the optimism is? Because one day they'll come back. Because one day we'll be reunited. Because one day the Geula will occur without all of the collateral damage that Mitzrayim brought with it. Oz Yashir. One day everything will be okay. When the Mashiach comes, when Tchias HaMeisim occurs. Again, right now, we have to give Hodah for what happened. But it's not complete. The complete Shira, that will happen in the future. So look at letter Beis for just a moment. He says something amazing. He says, Es HaShira HaZos Amar Shira Lashon Nikeva Velo Shir Belashon Zachar. This is quite interesting, right? It uses Dafka the feminine. Dafka the feminine for song and not the male version of Shir. Why? Listen to what he says. Lefi Sha'achar Zos HaGi'ula Ba'o Aleim Tzoros V'ga'alam Hashem Yisbarach Mehem V'zeh Kinekeva She'oledas. So right, the Todos Yitzchak something so profound. Then what happens? Moshe Rabbeinu realized that the experience of the Jewish people is more resembles the experience of a woman than it does a man. That the woman will conceive, she'll give birth, she'll have incredible difficulties in that birth, incredible pain in that birth, but that ultimately salvation always follows the birth. So Moshe Rabbeinu says the Todos Yitzchak is doing something amazing over here. He's, yes, thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for everything that had occurred, but more importantly, this Shira becomes a paradigm for the future. Is it perfect? Far from perfect. Just look at the Jewish bodies washing up on the shore. But you know what? Our experience is such that we have difficulty, we have pain, we have salvation. And often this process will repeat itself over and over and over again until final redemption ultimately occurs. And that Moshe Rabbeinu, at this moment, when members of Klal Yisrael lost their loved ones in Yam Suf, Moshe Rabbeinu tries to instill them with the incredible Amunah that the day will come, the day of Tchias HaMeisim, the day of Messianic redemption, when all will fall into place, will be here. That day is not now. That day is not happening for them at the banks of the Yam Suf. But we have to live with the belief that that day will come. Yes? I don't know. I think he was a Mekubal, but I don't know what his source is for it. I think what he's really doing is he's using the Gemara. Because what he's saying the Gemara is making it, why is there a death motif? Why is there, Tchias HaMeisim is a Jewish concept. So why is there a Jewish death motif concept linked with Kriyas Yam Suf? See, his idea must be, because there must have been Jewish dead at Kriyas Yam Suf. Why are there Jewish dead at Kriyas Yam Suf? Because Jews did not get out. So again, would I ever make such a suggestion like this? No, but clearly he felt, told us he must have felt, either just based on his understanding of the Gemara, or based on other ones, that this is what I told you. This forever alters the conception of Kriyas Yam Suf. Because we look at Kriyas Yam Suf as a total and whole salvation. The selective process of redemption, we understand, occurred at Choshech. But now again, there's a further selection process that occurs in Yam Suf as well, and therefore it's a bittersweet salvation. The ones who survived celebrate, but who was lost in the watery grave of the Yam Suf? Who didn't make it out? And so Moshe Rabbeinu has an obligation here, not just to have them sing Shira for the salvation, but to bolster them, to make them feel confident that one day, it didn't turn out the way we wanted it now, but one day everything will be okay. But the truth is, it's still problematic. I'm sorry? Right, so let me ask you a little bit differently. That maybe if we go with the Toldos Yitzchak's approach, then maybe the answer is that it's not the right time for Shira. Maybe put Shira on hold. You have to understand that there are times when Shira is appropriate, like we just mentioned before, like the Kina, right? Right? On Tisha B'Av, we don't have a Shira, because there are times when Shira is inappropriate. Right? Like the Gemara says, that we don't give divrei tanchumi l'misha meso muta l'fanof. If someone just experienced a loss, and literally burial hasn't even taken place yet, you don't give words of comfort. You don't. Why? It's not appropriate. Words of comfort have their time, but they have to be well-timed. While the loss is still fresh, while the wound is still open, you don't try to console someone. You could be there for them, you could put your arm around them, but you can't try to give them divrei tanchum. So we have to ask ourselves, if the Toldos Yitzchak's portrayal of events is true, and again, I hesitated sharing it, simply because it takes some of the wind out of the sails of Kriyas Yam Suf. Because it's like now, you know, as a people, we look for just moments where everything is perfect. Because we don't have a lot of those moments. We don't. And collectively, individually. So Kriyas Yam Suf, at least to me before I saw this, Toldos Yitzchak always represented one of those moments where just everything was perfect. Just perfect. Toldos Yitzchak says, it's not the way that it happened. But if it's not the way that it happened, then again, let's come full circle. Then why sing Shira at that moment? Maybe Shira is inappropriate. Why not wait until a little bit later? Let's take a look at number 10. So there's an amazing Beis Halevi. Yes. I don't know. I can't say that I looked through everyone. I looked through a lot of Mepharshim. I didn't see anyone who says anything that remotely resembles this. But again, I want to be clear, so because we shouldn't beat up on the Toldos Yitzchak. The Toldos Yitzchak's approach, however, resonates with a lot of clarity with the Gemara. Now we actually understand, because otherwise the Gemara is very problematic, because you don't understand why the Gemara is drawing a connection between Tchias HaMeisim and Kriyas Yam Suf. But what is Tchias? You know, Tchias HaMeisim represents when you lose someone you love. So Tchias HaMeisim represents the ultimate optimism, that when I say goodbye, it's goodbye for now. But it's not goodbye forever. Not just that I can connect with the neshama of my loved one, but one day I'll be able to embrace that loved one as well. That's very powerful. It's not by accident, by the way, that we say that bracha every single day in Shmona Esrei. Right? Right? Mechayim meisim ata rav lo shibrach tasha mechayim hameisim. Why do we make reference to that every day? Because that is the ultimate source of solace for a grieving heart. So the Toldos Yitzchak brings together the Gemara with the Yam Suf experience in a very profound way. But again, one more time, if that's the case, that it is such imperfect circumstances, that it's such a painful moment, then why sing Shira at all? Let's take a look at number 10. The Beis Halevi here says something that I think is absolutely magnificent. The Beis Halevi writes 10 Aleph, Oz Yashir Moshe. So he doesn't address the Gemara, and he doesn't address the future tense. He deals with a different issue. But we're going to loop it all back together. Isa B'Medrash, Amar Moshe Ba'az Chatosi, Sha'amartiu Me'az Basi L'Dabra Paro, Hera Lamaze, Ba'az Ani Omer Shira. So the Midrash makes a very interesting statement. At the end of Parsha Shmos, where Moshe Rabbeinu carries out his divine directive, goes to HaKadosh, goes to Paro, and says to Paro, release the people. And Paro says, Tichbad Ha'avoda, let the work get even harder. So Moshe Rabbeinu complains to God. He actually does more than complains. He lets God have it. He lets God have it. He says, God, Umeaz basi leparo ledaber b'shmecha. From the moment that I came to speak to Paro in your name, hayrala amazeh, things have gotten worse for the Jewish people, v'hatzeh lo itzalta esamecha, and you have not saved your people. So the Medrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu afterwards recognized that he overstepped his bounds a little bit, and therefore he says to God, God, the same way that I criticized you with the word az, I'm now going to praise you with the word az. Az Yashir Moshe Uvnei Yisrael Sashir Azal. So says the Beis Halevi, what does this mean? Take a look at letter Beis. Raka Inyon. And this is a very profound Beis Halevi. Raka Inyon. Dihine Mishahu Betzar Chalila. If someone is suffering, V'Akadosh Baruch Hu Ozro Matzilo, and God saves the person from their suffering, V'Nosei L'Akadosh Baruch Hu Shevach V'Hodaya Al HaTova V'Sha Asalo. And a person says, thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thank you for saving me, for extricating me from these difficult circumstances. Yesh bazeh, shnei ofan, and v'chalukim heim harbe. So the Beis Halevi writes, there are two different ways that this praise of salvation could take form. Im ikr simchas shel adam, u'mashna mishabech l'shmo yisbarach, hurak avor tovaso shekibel, v'hatzalosu mehatzar, harei lo yugdal simchas yosra me'elu lo hayo lo tzar mikodem. So listen to what the Beis Halevi says. We actually spoke about this also in one of our earlier shiurim. If a person was in difficult circumstances and was saved from those circumstances, so I thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the salvation. But in the back of my mind, what am I thinking? Why did you put me here in the first place? Right? Thank you for getting me out. Thank you for getting me out. But you also, like the same God that saved me, this is an intense theological issue that we all deal with. The same God that extricated me and that saved me was the same God that put me here to begin with. So God, I have a better proposal, a counter proposal. Don't put me in the difficult situation. Don't save me, and we'll call it even. Right? We'll call it even. So says the Beis Halevi, if a person has hodah, a person has thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a person has gratitude for God for extricating him from the difficult situation, that hodah will never go farther than had I not been put in this situation to begin with. Meaning, my gratitude is limited to the fact that essentially you restored me to my baseline that I was at before the tumultuous event. Thank you for restoring me to what I was before. Thank you. But my thanks is capped at that. And there's still that part of me that says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, again, this might sound a little bit strange, but God, you know, I have hodah, but I don't have that much hodah because you only restored me to what I was before, but that's because you put me in this situation to begin with. But it's not like I came out of this situation with some kind of windfall that now my standing or my stature is even better than it was before the incident. You just simply restored me to what I was, and I thank you for that. And that's why he says in the last line of letter Beis, V'ikr simchaso hu rak al ha'atzola v'lo al ha'atzar shemikodem debolo yismach klal. My gratitude and my happiness, my simcha, is limited to the fact that God extricated me from the circumstances. But I'm still left scratching my head wondering, why? Why? Thank you for getting me out of it, but why did you put me in it to begin with? But look at letter Gimel. Aval Ashira, Sha'amnu Moshe v'Yisrael. But listen to this. This is Beis Halevi. But the Shira that Moshe and the Jewish people said, Az lo haye ikar simchasam, azesh shenit solu miyad amitrim, Rak ikr simchasam haya al yidezeh shezachu liyosam hakli chayfetz asha ayadam niskad l'kvod yisparach v'al adi atzalas mimtzayin yisparach. Okay, so let me say this outside. So the Beis Halevi says like this. He said, and we spoke about this earlier, we actually spoke about this by Yaakov Avinu. The Beis Halevi says there's another level. And the other level is that a person realizes that there's a benefit even in the suffering. That even, it's not just the pshat that the benefit is in the salvation, that the benefit is in the Yeshua, but that there's benefit even in the tragedy. There's benefit even in the difficulty. There's benefit even in the suffering. And so that when a person gives hodah, when a person gives thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the person is thanking God not just for the salvation, but the person is thanking God for what? For the experience in its totality. Thank you for giving me this experience, because the experience as a whole was necessary for my maturation. The experience as a whole was necessary for my growth. Did it hurt? Was it horrible? Would I have asked for it l'chatchila? Probably not. But now that you put me into it, I'm not just going to thank you for the everything, everyone lived happily ever after, everything was okay. In retrospect, I thank you for the totality of the experience. Says the Beis Halevi, this is the metamorphosis of Moshe Rabbeinu. At the end of Parsha Shmos, when Moshe Rabbeinu gets upset at God because he doesn't understand why they're suffering, he doesn't understand why they have to be treated in such a barbaric fashion. He doesn't understand what the benefit is in the servitude. And says, Kodesh Baruch Hu, what are you doing? What are you doing? Umeaz, basi, lepar, ledaber, b'shmecha. Things are only getting worse. And where are you? Why are you being so indifferent? Why are you being so blind? Why are you turning your back on your children? And now, after Kriyas Yam Suf, Moshe Rabbeinu has an exceptional awakening. That's what? That the entire process was necessary. That the entire process was a growth process. That for the Jewish, and the Beis Halevi discusses, it's not a topic for today, what was the growth process, but that the entire process of being forged in the furnace of Egypt was necessary. And it was necessary for us. It was necessary for us to be slaves in order for us to become an Arla Goyim. It was necessary for us to be mistreated in order to know how to properly treat people. It was necessary for us to be abused in order for us to have the beautiful Jewish sensitivity that makes Klal Yisrael so unique. And Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't understand this the whole time. But when he stands by Yam Suf, and now the chapter of Egypt has come to a close, what does he say? Oz Yashir Moshe. Kadosh Baruch Hu, I'm going to sing Shira to you now. And not just Shira for the salvation. Not just Shira for the salvation. But Shira for the totality of the experience. Thank you for the salvation. And also thank you for all of the difficulties. Not, again, I want to be clear. Not thank you, like, thank you, may I have another, you know, for the suffering. But a thank you that I didn't ask for this. But now that you put me in this difficult situation, I understand the benefit of it. I understand the toeles of it. I understand why it was a necessary experience. What the Beis Halevi says is something exceptionally amazing. The Beis Halevi says, what we could glean from the Beis Halevi, is that Shira is only said for the totality of life's experiences. Shira is not simply said for salvation. Shira is not simply said for thanksgiving for good things. Shira is not simply said for salvation. Shira is said when you could look at the totality of a life experience. All of the bad things, all of the barbaric things, all of the horrific and tragic things, together with all of the elements in salvation, and say, thank you Hashem for that. Because as difficult and as tumultuous, bless you, as it was, I gained something from that experience. That's a Shira experience. Only when you could thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all aspects, again, one more time, the totality of the experience. I wrote it down, so I wouldn't forget the wording. Shira is the ultimate, total, comprehensive praise of God, which praises God for the good as well as for the difficult. Now let's back into our answers. So now we understand why they didn't say Shira when they left Mitzrayim. Because ultimately, when they first left Mitzrayim, you know, sometimes in order to be able to sing Shira, you need to have a little bit of distance from your circumstances. So when they left Mitzrayim, the only thing they could think about was what?
Salvation.
That we're free. We're free. Egypt was horrible. Egypt was horrific. Let's just get as far away from Egypt as possible. As far as they were concerned, there was nothing redeeming in that experience. It's only after Yam Suf. It's only after Yam Suf that what? That now they begin to appreciate the Shibud. It's only now after Yom Suf that they could look back with a certain degree of distance and say what? And say even the tumultuous and difficult aspects of our life were necessary part of the Geula process as well. That's why it's phrased in future tense. Because what the Torah is trying to highlight to us now by saying it's essentially present future, by telling us that it was only dafka now at this moment and no earlier that Shira could have been said. Because it's only now that they understand that the entirety of their existence, the entirety of their experience was necessary. That the difficulty, the Shibud, the suffering, all of the terrible things they had to endure for the last 210 years were just as important, just as pivotal, and just as cathartic as the last couple of weeks of redemption. So now, if we bring this all back, right, remember this is the Shira on Tehillim, not a Shira on Parashah. So let's bring this all back. So now we understand why David HaMelech phrases all of his Tehillim as Shiros. So now we have a new definition of Shira. Shira is not just song. Shira is not just Thanksgiving. And Shira is certainly not just about happy events. Shira is the expression of praise to God when you can thank God for the totality of your circumstances. When you can thank God for the suffering, and you can thank Him for the salvation. When you can thank Him for the good times, and you can thank Him for the difficult times. Because you recognize that every single piece of your existence somehow contributes to the fabric of who and what you are. So therefore, David HaMelech, what is David HaMelech writing about in Tehillim? David HaMelech is writing about the totality of his existence. David HaMelech is saying, yes, times have been very difficult, and I have problems with my family, and I have problems with my children, and I have problems with my marriage, and I have problems with my people, and I have problems with my God, and I have problems with the Goyim, and I have problems everywhere. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know what? I also have a lot of wonderful things happening in my life. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, one thing I recognize, and this is the hallmark of the Davidic personality, that anything and everything you throw my way is for my benefit. That anything and everything that I have to deal with contributes at the end of the day in a positive fashion to who and what I am. Therefore, David HaMelech says, I have the right to sing Shira because I am the one who has recognized that everything that happens to me in my life, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thank you. Would I like it to be a little bit different? Would I like it to be a little bit easier? Who wouldn't? But that's the entirety of Seferdom. David HaMelech recognizing the Yad Hashem and the importance in every life event, both the good as well as the traumatic. And therefore, yes, indeed, it becomes a book full of Shira. So now that we understand this concept, I think this lays the foundation. Now that the truth is we could stop even our series on Sefer Tehillim right now, because this is it. This really is it. Of course, it's fascinating to see the specifics. The specific life events, the specific episodes, but ultimately, even though we normally associate this word Shira with good tidings, with happiness, with redemption, we see that one more time that Shira really represents the ability to recognize the hand of God, divine providence, and the benefit to us personally and nationally in both good as well as difficult times. All right, we'll stop over here.